conversely, I have people who I know are struggling more, who will do their utmost to afford whatever their pet needs, regardless of the impact on their own well-being.
Welcome to the Call the Vet Show, the podcast that helps pet parents understand and optimize the health of their furry family so they can live the full and happy life you want for them. And here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Alex Avery.
Hello, kia ora. Welcome to another episode of the show. Delighted to be talking to you again this week. And this week is really more of a thought piece. I want to kind of explore a few ideas with you. And, you know, we might disagree. We may be on the same page. But we've been speaking a lot recently. A few episodes ago, we spoke about the human-animal bond. We've also spoken about the bond with our stray and feral cats. And so I want to explore the idea or the thought, should you keep a pet if you can't afford their care? I'm sure this is something that you've come across, maybe even thought about, maybe even commented on over on Facebook or some other social media platform, or in the comment sections of, you know, different kind of media reports and that kind of things, where often emotions can run pretty high and there is very much a polarizing of opinions. And so I want to kind of explore the thought behind this idea and whether it's a justified opinion to have, or whether actually it's maybe a little bit more complicated than we may at first kind of think it is. But before we get into that, if you've not listened before, then I'm veterinarian Dr. Alex. I'm a vet in general practice down in beautiful Aotearoa, New Zealand, originally from the UK. And this is the podcast. If you want to learn more about your pet's care, if you want to think a little bit more deeply than maybe some of the superficial blogs and social posts that you come across, and really if you want the best for your pet. So if that sounds like you, then make sure you hit that subscribe or follow button if you are not already a subscriber. And if you've listened before, then I'm delighted that you've taken the time to join me for yet another episode. And as always, I'd love to hear your thoughts, comments. You can hit me up over on YouTube. Comments is probably actually the best place. I kind of go backwards and forwards over the social media platforms. I'm not a big user or fan of social media personally. Maybe a little bit of a dinosaur from that point of view. But Facebook, but YouTube comments is something that I always try and at least read and most likely to reply. So I'd love to hear your comments. You can find me on YouTube. It's Our Pets Health. I am also on Instagram, Facebook, even the odd TikTok video now, where you can find me at Our Pets Health on all of those platforms. And so with all that introduction out of the way, let's jump into the episode proper.
And now on with the show.
So at the vet clinic, you can imagine we see all manner of different cases that need a really wide range of different investigative options or treatment pathways that we need to decide upon. And they vary hugely in the cost that can come with them, the price tag that can come with them. We also see clients from all walks of life, or certainly I do in my clinic, from very wealthy to those that are struggling to actually properly feed and clothe themselves. And so sometimes the most expensive treatments are affordable, and sometimes those even on the cheaper end of the spectrum are out of reach. And, you know, I'm very well aware, and I'm sure you're aware, and you maybe be a part of this, but this scenario plays out in vet clinics across the world. And as well as getting retold in staff rooms, as I mentioned at the beginning, it also gets retold on social media forums, in media articles, often which are vilifying the veterinary profession, unfortunately, or in spaces where the owner is simply seeking help and advice. And one common retort that I read time and again is that along the lines of, if you can't afford their care, then you shouldn't have a pet. But is that really right? And that's really the sentiment and the discussion that I want to have with you and explore with you today. Now, as always, I don't claim to have all the answers. This is very much my opinion, my feelings around this. And it's feelings and opinions that do change and morph and develop and evolve over time as well. You know, but I've been doing this job for 16, 17 or something like that years now. So, you know, it's something that I have come across time and again, and I've had plenty of time to see the stories that go on kind of behind the scenes that aren't maybe at first apparent. But really, on the face of things, there's nothing wrong with the sentiment of if you can't afford their care, you shouldn't have a pet. You know, it's coming from a place of care, from a place of love for that animal, of recognizing the individual needs of an individual dog or cat, and actually wanting every pet to have every health option available to them. And in an ideal world, this would absolutely be the case. Finances would play no role in healthcare decision making, but we don't live in that ideal world. We live in the real world, and this isn't even the case when it comes to our own care, and I'm going to touch on that later. And this is exactly where this sentiment or this belief, this statement starts to break down. So to highlight this, I want to give you a scenario. So let's take the hypothetical Jones family. They include Mum Heather, she works as a developer. We've got Dad John, who's a part-time gardener, two primary age kids, Steph and James, and a five-year-old Hamish, a much-loved border terrier. Now, I say border terrier because they're the breed that's got a soft spot in my heart. And if I had a dog, I don't. I've currently got two cats and a guinea pig. But if I had a dog, I think it would be a border terrier. Grew up with spaniels, and I do love spaniels. But I think a border terrier would be what I would go for. But anyway, there's clearly nothing wrong here. They live within their means. Heather, she's got a high-paying job. They can afford the top level of health insurance for the whole family, for themselves, but also for Hamish. And they do have a rainy day fund as well, just in case the care that Hamish needs actually exceeds the payout for that health insurance. But what then if Heather suddenly gets laid off unexpectedly? And while they have some savings to cushion the blow, it won't be long before they will be struggling to pay their rent or pay their mortgage. You know, especially the costs of those are climbing, and this may be a familiar situation to you right now. And if she can't find a new job, they're really going to be in trouble. So they tighten their belts, they cut out all costs that aren't an absolute necessity. Hamish's insurance premium then gets downgraded to accident only, and they would struggle to pay any uncovered costs of more than about $5,000. Is this still okay for them to keep Hamish in their lives? Now, what then if times, you know, get really tough for them? You know, jobs are hard to come by, no matter the industry. Heather, she just really can't find a new job. And Dad John only manages to pick up a few extra hours of gardening here and there and has a look around for other jobs, but there's just nothing going. So the family, they have to move to a cheaper rental that is still barely affordable. And really, if it's not needed for day-to-day living, then whatever that is now simply unaffordable. They've worked their way through their savings. They are trying to keep their kids' lives consistent, provide everything that their kids need to maintain kind of their well-being. Hamish's insurance is long gone, and the family could just about scrape together a few hundred bucks if needed for an emergency. Should they still keep Hamish in their lives? You know, that is a real question, because that is the reality of many people, or the potential reality. You know, even for people who have plenty of income, it may be that actually they don't have very much disposable income, but you know it says we're only two or three paychecks away from being in real desperate need. So this could be the reality that any of us face, depending on what life throws our way. And I imagine kind of listening to that, you probably don't see an issue here with the family keeping Hamish as part of their family. They're changing financial status. It's got nothing to do with changing how much they love him, how much they try and care for him and try and do the best that they can for him. And, you know, thinking about that human animal bond, which is what we discussed with Dr. Doug Mader in episode 140, definitely one to check out if you've not listened to that already. You know, it's clear not only the benefit that Hamish can bring to the whole family in terms of well-being, mental well-being, but also their health. We also need to think about the distress that will be caused by having to give him up for adoption, to taking him to a shelter, to basically giving up a member of your family. How distressing is that going to be for mum and dad, but also for the two kids in this situation? So that's one scenario, kind of talking through a couple of potential situations that may well happen. And the current time that we're living in, you know, this is going to unfortunately be the reality for many people out there. But what if the situation is changed slightly? We'll change the scenario to maybe make it a little bit, in inverted commas, easier for you. If we start out with the fact that mum has poor health and she's unable to work, dad's working at low income jobs, there's no security there. You know, he's constantly at risk of being made redundant or being laid off. I mean, maybe even on a 0 hours contract. So he doesn't know whether he's going to, you know, work from one day to the next. And as a family, they have no ability to save for a rainy day. They are struggling to make ends meet. They are providing the best they can for their family. You know, they can afford Hamish's basic routine healthcare needs, but if anything serious happened, they would really struggle. And realistically, they'd be unable to cope with paying for a bill of any significance. So should they have even brought Hamish into their family in the first place? Should they forego the benefits to their own health and well-being, to that of their children? And also from Hamish's point of view, you know, we're living in a time when there are loads of dogs and cats up for adoption, living in shelters that need a good home. So should Hamish have missed out on being part of a family that love him and love him very much and do their very best they can for him? I'm going to leave that question hanging there. But if we go back to that initial statement, you know, if you can't afford their care, you shouldn't have a pet. What should we consider the minimum someone should be able to afford? What do we consider their care, in inverted commas? Well, is that just the initial set of, you know, vaccines and spay neuter costs? Are we talking about a couple of consultations and a short course of treatment? What about a more involved investigation and hospital stay? So maybe some blood, some x-ray, ultrasound, and staying in the hospital for a couple of days for a more serious illness. Should we be able to afford regular dental procedures? For some breeds, that might ideally be every 6 to 12 months. What about surgical repair of a fractured leg, which is going to be many, many thousands of dollars? And then what about MRI and spinal surgery for a slipped disc, or investigation for you know, seizures and potential for brain surgery if there is a growth to be found? You know, that's going to be tens potentially of thousands of dollars. Is that the level of care that we need to be able to afford if we're making that statement? You know, we also need to add in the fact that the vast majority of pets, they're never going to need expensive surgery. They're never going to develop a severe illness. And so that line becomes even harder to draw if we're making these blanket statements. And we also need to bear in mind that all too often, unfortunately, people, ourselves, we're struggling to pay or to access care for our own healthcare needs. You know, I read about the cost of insulin in the US, which is just ridiculously expensive and is unforgivable. And when, you know, I don't like to knock whole industries, but when we talk about big pharma, that is, you know, one of the poster childs. There's no justification for being that expensive, but that's the reality that people are living in. Diabetic people are struggling to afford the care that is keeping them alive. Or, you know, a different scenario, dental care, access to dental care, even when costs are subsidized, as in the UK, can be almost impossible. You know, so is it fair to demand that we can only have a pet, we can only have an animal in our life if we can provide them with better care than we can provide for ourselves? Now, clearly, you know, this human health situation, it's also unacceptable, but it is the reality that we live in. And vilifying doctors, vilifying veterinarians and people working in the veterinary industry is, you know, false as well. And I've spoken about that, and I'm not going to go on a big rant about that. But the bottom line is where do we draw the line with affordability? And then the next thought comes that I would also say that experience tells me that just because someone can afford care doesn't always mean that actually, when push comes to shove, they will choose to spend their money on their pet at their pet's time of need. You know, I often come across people who have the funds available, or at least, you know, they appear to be well off. And I know that appearances can be deceptive, and it may be that they've, you know, dressing really well, they've got the most expensive smartphone, they're driving a very nice car, but maybe their eyeballs in debt. You know, I'm aware that that can be the case. But, you know, I will often come across people who, you know, appear to have plenty of funds available, but who decline even simple diagnostics or treatment courses for their pet, even when the prognosis is likely very, very good. Conversely, I have people who I know are struggling more, who will do their utmost to afford whatever their pet needs, regardless of the impact on their own well-being. You know, money in the bank, it really doesn't always mean that it will go to the family's pet care at the time their dog or cat needs that money to be spent. And so what are my thoughts? Should you keep a pet if you can't afford their care? What level of care should you be able to afford before bringing a pet into your life? Well, you know, these are my opinions. I feel that ideally everyone should be able to meet the minimum preventive healthcare requirements of vaccination, of parasite control, and what that means depends on geography and where you live in the world, as well as de-sexing. You know, these are known costs. There are cheaper options often available through maybe charity schemes, through low-cost clinics, through access of different funds that might be available, again, depending on where you live. But all of these things make this level of care even more accessible. And these are known costs. These are costs that can be planned for. They can also be spread out over a period of time. You know, we don't get a puppy, vaccinate them and neuter them all in the same week. It's something that's spread out over, you know, months, even a couple of years. Clearly, people also absolutely need to be able to properly feed their pet. That can be a potential issue for our bigger dogs, especially. They do actually need to eat quite a lot. And even the cheapest food can add up to a significant expense. We also need to be able to provide them with a safe and healthy environment for them to live in. And we also need to care for them. We need to be emotionally invested. We need to love them. They're not just a commodity to be owned, a status symbol. They are a living animal, and sometimes, unfortunately, that's where even people with the most money fall down and fail to recognize. I also think that ideally there should be a rainy day fund to allow for treatment, for basic treatment. So a trip to the veterinarian for a consultation and a basic course of maybe anti-inflammatories and antibiotics. You know, that will again vary, but let's say that's somewhere between $200 to $500. Now, is this an absolute essential, an absolute necessity? No, I don't believe so, but I think it's something that every pet parent can aspire to and work towards. And there also are alternative options, various credit options. You know, these unfortunately often tend to come at a high cost to access in terms of setup fees and interest charges, but they are options that are available. And I believe that at the very least, everyone should have some kind of plan or awareness of these options should the worst happen. And I've spoken before about the different options available if, you know, we're really struggling to meet costs. I'll leave links to those in the show notes as well. Now, if you're buying a dog from a breeder, if you're going out of your way to buy a purebred dog of a specific breed, that would actually set the bar higher, because those dogs are, you know, costing many thousands of dollars in most cases currently. And I would say that actually, if you can afford to go to a breeder to spend that kind of money on a dog, then really you should have a treatment fund of at least twice the purchase cost as a guideline. Though if you're getting a breed that is known to frequently suffer from expensive problems, and the breed that springs immediately to my mind is the bulldog, a breed that I am seeing more of in the clinic at the moment, then, you know, either insurance and full insurance is a must, or your emergency fund really needs to be higher, because the chance of your pet needing it is much, much greater. So those are my thoughts around this topic and my belief about what we should be able to afford to have a pet in our life. But I want to leave you with this final thought or idea that, you know, while having a pet in our life, it is a privilege and not a right. Do we really want to make them a luxury item that only the very wealthy can afford? Do we really want to deny so many people the joy and benefits of having a furry family member in our life, the huge benefits to our well-being and to our physical health that they bring? And do we want to deny these animals the opportunity of living in homes where they will be truly loved? Well, to my mind, the answer to all of these is no.
Helping your pet live the happy, healthy life they deserve.
So I hope that gave you some food for thought, and maybe made you aware of some situations of the reality of different people at different walks of life. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this as well, you know, on all of those platforms that I mentioned beginning. Also, if you're not actually signed up to my newsletter, The Pet Post, it goes out maybe once or twice a month, typically a week or so after these podcast episodes. There's the odd extra one thrown in where I talk a little bit about kind of what's going on in the podcast. So it gives you an idea of what you may have missed out on if you don't catch an episode. But it also runs through a couple of other related posts, links to some other pieces of content on a similar vein, as well as giving some updates in the healthcare world. So some news about maybe new treatments, new studies out there, new developments that really it would be very valuable for you to know about. You can head over to ourpetshealth.com and the homepage there. There's a link to sign up to the Pet Post. I'd love to have you along as a Pet Post recipient. There's about 2,500 pet parents on there at the moment and growing, so I'd love for you to be a part of that. And you can always just hit that reply to any email I send, and I read those personally and try and respond to them in as timely a fashion as possible as well. So I'd love to hear your thoughts. Finally, if you think this will benefit anyone in your life, any other pet parent, pet lover out there, then I'd love for you to let them know that this is a podcast that they would benefit from listening to. So forwarding it to them or sharing it on your social platforms, just to help me spread the word and ultimately help to impact and improve the life of more pet parents and more pets out there. But for now, that's it from me for this episode of the show. I'm looking forward to talking to you in the next one. But until then, I'm veterinarian Dr. Alex. This is the Call the Vet Show, because they're family.
That's it for this episode of the Call the Vet Show. Be sure to visit callthevet.org to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. We'll see you next time.